financial interest in the transaction, but the impediment is that I serve on the boards of two corporations that are in this transaction, then that is also perceived as a conflict of interest, but not nearly as potentially serious a conflict of interest. There are different standards for validating the transaction depending upon whether the difficulty is that the director has a personal primary conflict of interest or merely this institutional secondary conflict of interest, the common director problem. Now, where you need answers to the following questions. Can such a director attend the meeting? Can the attendance of the director be counted in ascertaining whether a quorum of the board is present? Can such a director participate in the discussion of the proposition? And finally, can such a director vote on whether the board approves or disapproves the transaction and have that vote counted? Now, those are the classical questions which the law has wrestled with. The statute seeks to answer every one of them. Yes, whether or not the problem is that the director has a personal primary conflict of interest or merely this secondary common directorship conflict, the director may attend the meeting. Yes, the director's presence may be counted in ascertaining the quorum. Yes, the director may participate in discussing the transaction. Can the director vote? Yes. Can the director's vote be counted? No, never. The vote of the interested director or the vote of the common director can be cast, but it cannot be counted in determining whether or not a majority of the board, a majority of the quorum, has assented. Now, this is a choice between two different state law policies, and the law must come down on one side of this issue or the other. The worst thing is to leave you stranded with one leg over each side of a barbed wire fence. All right? Either you say that the tainted director is not to darken the door and be present. There's a body of state law that says that's what you do. The tainted director stays away, doesn't participate, can't be counted, can't vote. The framers, the Codivision Commission, is recommending that we follow the provisions that are common in most states today, which is to say, no, it's far, far better that the director be present and participating and able to answer questions, because the transaction cannot be validated unless you can prove that the rest of the directors did not have any form of conflict of interest, were fully informed of the conflict of interest of their colleague, either by the colleague or had prior personal knowledge of all the material facts, and in that informed frame of mind, voted in favor of the transaction out of what they believed was the pursuit of the best interests of the corporation. Right? So that's the basic scenario on conflict of interest. If the new Alaska Corporation Code, Section 478, were adopted as part of this as an omnibus bill, or this were lifted out and it were merely added to this to fill the vacuum that presently is there, because you have no answers to these questions, the transaction can be validated depending upon whether there's a primary or secondary cause of action. And there are different rules, and I can go into those if it would be helpful. If it's a primary cause of action, the transaction is validated either by having the shareholders approve it, in which case, if they're fully informed of the director's personal material financial interest, they can nevertheless validate the transaction. And in that instance, the transaction is immune from attack. If the shareholders can't, and the shares owned by the interested director cannot be voted, right? Or if you try and validate it at the board level, then you have to have a disinterested majority of the board who approved the transaction with full knowledge of all of the details of the conflict of interest. And in the event of any judicial challenge to that transaction, the party who had the material financial interest has the burden of proving that the transaction was fair and in the best interest of the corporation on the date it was authorized. So the statute makes it clear that the interested director has the burden of ascertaining and bearing and convincing a court that it was fair. If it's not challenged, if nobody litigates, you never get to that second part. If the only problem is a common directorship, the director does not have a material financial interest but is on the board of two corporations and they're dealing, then a disinterested majority of the board is competent to validate the transaction and it's immune from assault and litigation, presuming that there's been full disclosure of the of that situation. So that you do now have the potential for having statutory solutions, and my only point is that the law on these very important and recurrent problem areas ought to be set out so that people can know what it is in advance.
And you've set it out in the new proposed
Section
statute.
Section 478 sets it out, as
That's
I
the new draft.
That's that, the draft, that, which is going to be reintroduced in the new legislature early on in the...
Dolly and then Elizabeth, and then we'll hear from the folks representing the shareholders in prison.
Okay, this was brought up at our Village Corporation one time, and what was brought up was that they felt that Sean Seat should pass a proposal that stated if a board member is a Village Corporation board member, they cannot be a Regional Corporation board member. We were immediately told by a lawyer that you cannot do that because you're denying a shareholder a right. Is that true?
The way to do it, Dolly, if a corporation wanted to have that policy, you put a provision in the articles which can set the qualifications for directors. I can't overemphasize the degree to which you have freedom. You can say that directors have to be over the age of 40 and they can't be over they can't be over the age of 80. I mean, you can put provisions in. You can also put provisions in that no one can be a director of this corporation who occupies the position of director or officer of any other corporation. In the absence of such provisions in the articles, then it would be difficult to see how a corporation could sort of after the fact say, no, you can't sit on the board if the shareholders have elected the person to be a director. But you can clearly handle that problem and anticipate it right now without even the adoption of this statute, because this statute permits the corporation's articles to set the qualifications for directors.
And those articles can be amended?
They can certainly be amended.
Okay.
They can certainly be amended. Requires, if I can just finish the thought, it requires that what you do is that the board frames the terms of the amendment. The amendment is submitted to the shareholders, and it must gain a two-thirds concurrence. And at that point, you've amended your article.
Elizabeth, we'll give you the second last word here.
Tony, this is sort of in response to you in particular, just that although Dan in his answer dealt with transactions, it has been our experience at Bristol Bay that it is not transactions so much that you're worried about as it is if you get a directors, we have 12 directors, if all 12 of them are in a situation where they occupy both Village Corporation Board positions and then also Regional Corporation Board positions, when it comes to the kinds of things, not so much transactions, but where you're setting policy like 14F or relationships of surface and subsurface, the kind of thing that cuts across all villages, if you were to try to turn to your board and look to them and say, where are the disinterested directors, you wouldn't find any. And because of the relationships because of these, the way the assets worked under the Act and the many interrelationships that regions and villages have had, Bristol Bay did go ahead with the policy and the qualification, and as Dan said, you can't make it retroactive, but you can make it for the future, that our directors do not serve on both village and regional boards. It was just a way of cleaning it up, and it made it simpler because we would look around at certain times and not have disinterested directors, no matter how you sliced it.
Well, would you like to make your presentation then? Give us your name again, if you don't mind, and pull the mic towards you.
Thank you. Can you hear me now?
A little closer, I think.
Okay. There. My name is Deesa Jacobson. I act as the advisor to the Spiritual Council, which is situated within the penal institution located out in Palmer. I began working with them quite by accident by going out to see another resident, and I looked around and noticed that there were a lot of Native men in there, more than I expected. So after going to their meetings, their statement, besides who is this Berger fellow and what is sovereignty, was that they had poisons inside them that they wanted identified and extracted, because they knew if this did not happen, once they left the penal institutions, they would return, and unfortunately more people would be hurt in the process. We're asking for traditional healing methods in lieu of chemical therapy. By traditional healing methods, we find that frozen fish and seal oil are instant antidepressants. And traditional healing methods such as talking circle, as opposed to court-ordered occasional psychiatric tests and visits, and of course, well-meaning students who come out to finish their term papers who use the residents as guinea pigs. We also found found some alarming facts, and that is two young men who were released from a penal institution from one village are doing reasonably well. Two were released, and five more from the same village came in to take their place, not to mention the other men that were already in there. Now, if this keeps up, there will be no one left to guard the village but elders and children and women. While we as women find this as no problem, we function better if our men are around us. We also were informed by Jones Wongatillen from the Norton Sound Health Corporation that it was calculated how much we drink as Native people, when we drink, and the drugs we take, and this was times into the number of alcohol and drug-related murders, suicides, accidental deaths, rapes, and so on, and they calculated that unless we stop now, in 25 years or less, every Native man, woman, and kid will be dead, and I heard this 4 years ago. The resolutions that were passed at AFN can be supported by the six studies that were done by the judicial system here that says that Native people get twice the sentence and twice the fine for the same goodies that are committed by everyone else, and we want to know why. They also said that some of the acts that they committed did warrant incarceration for the safety of their village and for themselves, but they're all alcohol-related violent deaths. We have found that the men in there are not raised by criminal Native families to become criminals. That is not possible. They are hunters and whalers and men who fish to feed their families, who got drunk and made a tragic mistake. The cancer that they were able to isolate and which we want to take steps to eradicate now is anger turned into very hideous rage. And once they consume alcohol, unfortunately, this comes out not only very inappropriately, but very dangerously. While this seems like a well-meaning program and it's grassroots and for the love of God and fresh air, we've run into a few obstacles, and that is the ceremonies that are done that are traditional, that are healing, that work, are not recognized by the clergy. We were told to go in there and make the men accept the Lord Jesus Christ as their personal Savior and they'll be healed. And our argument was, while we recognize that our common denominator with that pale-faced bearded healer is that we are villagers, and that the healing that we want to introduce in that penal system is pre-missionary, and they do not understand that. The residents there formed a spiritual council in the hopes of taping all of their sessions to offer that finished tape to the sovereign nation of Akyachuk in hopes that it would be endorsed and sanctioned and introduced to the AFN convention. That way, they said they could help their own people in the village, more or less on the same theory as the Scared Straight film done in the penal institutions in the lower 48. We also ran into what we call Palmer Gate, where the guards had taken the tapes that we had made. We have our own video equipment, and since you cannot buy or sell spirituality, this healing would be at no cost to anyone, and everyone would benefit. The guards took the tapes and erased them. We have documents that where they denied the men the denied them their right to organize as a spiritual council because we deal with what Kubler-Ross deals with, and that's four quadrants of the human being. They're spiritual, emotional, physical, and intellectual quadrants all require healing. But this cannot be done in a penal institution where there are no viable or culturally relevant healing programs. What we're saying is, unless these poisons are extracted and unless rehab is really introduced, we're going to send those men back out into the villages 10 times worse than when they got in there. If we can learn to control their anger or say that it's okay, they'll be okay. The acts that they committed were usually against women and children or people in their own family. While the men are in prison, the treatment that they get is classified as psychological abuse. I specialize in the dynamics and politics of sexual assault and violence, and it's documented what they do to the men. Once we went into the library and on the blackboard in 6-inch letters said, this is communication, saying it in plain enough English so you Eskimos will know to put your chairs away after the meeting. Now, while the Aleut brethren are in there not understanding what's on that blackboard as a Yupik woman, I know what that means and I'm offended and I'm not a prisoner. We don't think that we could have started at a better place than to come before the Berger Commission, and besides that, no one else will listen to us. We've been placed last on everyone's agenda because people are, for one thing, glad that those men are in there because they hurt a lot of people in the process. And once they're in there, they're forgotten, and their biggest complaint is the only time we ever see our so-called Native leaders is when they come here to get my proxy, and then we never hear from them again. We're asking for further endorsement of those resolutions so we can complete our follow-up work. And we're asking that the penal institutions either be reformed or made better, or for Pete's sake, close them down and put the men back in the villages where they can be dealt with at the hands of their traditional councils. We know of the Molly Hooch case, and one of our residents happens to be Michael Hooch, and we are prepared to take such measures. We're also asking you if you have, I know that everyone in Alaska, especially Native people, have been touched by, in some way or another, by an act of violence, and if all of those men are in there, that means all of us are in there too. Without us women out there picking berries, it's just frozen tundra, and without them men fishing out there, all these stacks of paper and all of these fancy words that you talk here are meaningless, because what good are they without human beings to sanction them? If the men were here, I'm certain that they would address you in the spirit of gratitude and humility. We're not asking for any kind of a program based on hatred or revenge, but humanity. And these are not based on emotions, but reality. What we could do is present the Berger Commission with our nasty little packet, with all our nasty little facts about that nasty little prison, and we want it to end. And we thank you for this opportunity.
Well, thank you, Ms. Jacobson. Mm-hmm. This commission is established by the ICC, the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, and the World Council of Indigenous People, and my report goes to them next summer. It will, of course, be made public and sent to everyone who's participated, but it should be understood that I have not been appointed by the United States government or by the government of Alaska, so that apart from the mandate I have from those two Native peoples' organizations, I haven't been asked by the state to consider the condition of its Native inmates. But I appreciate your coming, and insofar as it may lie within my mandate, you can rest assured I'll give every consideration to the things you've said.
Thank you very much. And if there's any information that we can give you, we'll be happy to do that.
Thanks.
And the men also asked for a special request that you come out there and address them.
OK. Okay, we'll try to work that in. I'll
They meet on Monday and Saturday.
Pardon me?
They meet on Monday and Saturday.
Monday and Saturday. Well, Saturday sounds promising.
Good. Thank you very much.
I think we should. I'm kind of exhausted, and I think we should adjourn. And I'll just thank you all for coming, and invite you to the commission offices for a reception and a get together. And I do appreciate all that you have said, and it's been very useful to me. So thank you all. Yeah. Okay.
Into our tribal governments. Okay, all of this corporation, the ANSCA corporations, the BIA Act of 1934, IRA, and all of these self-determination, what's new? I mean, I don't know what the new acts are now that are designed to help us govern ourselves, right? None, as Sheldon Kachetag said, none, the ANSCA vehicle is not working. None of these vehicles are working. Our indigenous tribal government, the law of our land shall prevail. Our men shall hunt, and our women shall gather berries and sow. And we shall have complete dominion as we always have. You won't find the solution here. It has to be done in the villages, and I commend you. I commend you, Mr. Berger, or Honorable Berger. I think you're very fair, and I thank you that we have at least this audience of people. But the tribes, the villages shall determine their own destinies, and that's that. The way these men are suffering, the way we women are suffering without places to stay, without anything, you know, no hunter. Ari, we can't take it anymore. It's not working. Give us back with your commission. I know you will help us.
Well, thank you for what you've said, and perhaps I should add that these meetings are very good, and I find them very helpful, but I have been going to the villages and spent most of my time there because it's kind of like a cold shower after one of these legal gatherings. So, well, we'll see you back at the office.